Hello and welcome back to episode 101 of the Chaos Ball podcast. Thanks for tuning in. We've known for about a week now, but the Mariners offseason is it's over. Jerry DePoto and company has put a bow on their offseason. Pitchers and catchers report in a couple days. We're very close to spring training. And I don't feel particularly inspired by the roster that they've put in front of us. I took a little while to get this pod out. My, scheduling and whatnot. I can't make excuses. I didn't feel like doing an emergency podcast for the signing of Jorge Polanco, I'll be honest with you. I would have potentially done one if they had signed like Pete Alonso or made a big trade. Nothing they did this offseason constituted an emergency podcast. I wish that they did something to force me to do that, but they didn't. I don't even think they did anything last offseason that made me do an emergency pod. I think the last one I did was like Teoscar signing years ago. Even when they traded for Randy, it was just like a normal trade deadline recap podcast. I wish I was really excited about the Jorge Polanco signing. I'll be very honest. I'm not. I'm really not. It's rather bleak out here just looking at this Mariners roster. But it's hilarious. It's hilarious that this is where the offseason arrived at. At the start of the offseason, I think everyone was hopeful. I think fans were hopeful, just in general, which was a mistake, for sure. But there were comments that the team was going to be active, they were going to be looking to fill the holes in the roster. That's what we were told. Obviously, there was some money coming off the books. They had acquired Justin Turner and Jimmy Garcia at the deadline, and those contracts were falling off the books. The Jorge Polanco, it was expected his contract was going to fall off the books as well. But they immediately tempered our expectations with reports that they basically had like $15 million to spend. And it turns out they saved money, if that was truly their budget. So shout out to them. They spent a total of, what is the Donovan Solano contract? $2.5 million, $3 million? So like $10 million. Dollars with Jorge Polanco, Donovan Solano. So really they came out on top this offseason and saved some money, which is really what I like to see with my baseball team. I really hope I just want them to be as fiscally responsible as possible. I don't really care about winning. But no, the offseason, as it rolled on, they were very quiet. It was a very bizarre DePoto offseason. There was not, like, I don't think I really expected them to be in on any of the free agent hitters. I think I said that at the start of the offseason. I said a lot of these hitters make sense for the Mariners, but they don't really, I have no faith they're going to sign them. Like, maybe Christian Walker I was hopeful to sign, but no, he's on a $20 million contract. That's far too much money. And the offseason just kept going. It just kept going and kept going. And kept going, and guys kept falling off the board, and the Mariners kept just standing there, doing nothing. And the offseason kept going, and they signed Donovan Solano, and then weeks go by again, nothing happens, and they sign Jorge Polanco. In the meantime, they've signed a bunch of pitchers, a bunch of relief pitchers, to throw on the pile, to pitch in AAA, and to pitch in, I guess, earn a spot in spring training. A lot of very interesting arms. That is something I focused on the least this offseason, and even going into it, I said, I'm not worried about the bullpen. I haven't been worried about the bullpen in years. I'm really still not worried about the bullpen, even after, I guess you could call it a slight down year last year, but there's still a pretty damn good pen overall. I'm not worried about the pen. They will fill those arms. They can do that. I'm worried that the biggest offseason acquisition was Jorge Polanco or Austin Shenton, and that Mitch Haniger is still penciled into the starting lineup. That is personally what I'm worried about. I think they completely misjudged the offseason. I think initially it was kind of a breath of fresh air to not be the team that sets the trade market, as DePoto has been one to do. I feel like it's him or Preller every offseason recently that has kind of set the trade market for a particular position or just type of player. Bizarre offseason for both front office guys, both uniquely quiet from two absolute psychopaths. AJ Preller is even crazier than DePoto, and he has been clearly quite hamstrung by their ownership situation. And I guess DePoto has as well. I don't even want to give him that credit. I mean, the Mariners are dealing with like the RSN stuff. That's really no excuse to not put a little bit more money in this team. And Randy Rosarena getting added to this team at the deadline and then being paid an arbitration simply does not count as a, like, you can't lump that into the offseason payroll. I'm looking forward to it. I think just looking at the team now, this team might be a little bit better on paper going into the year than they were last year, simply because Randy Rosarena is on the team. And even like the potential upside of what we saw with Victor Robles is exciting. And yet I still feel so much dread, because just looking at the bottom of the lineup is awful. But I think they misjudged the offseason. I think they went and they were going to take a step back and be like, okay, we're not going to set the trade market here. We're obviously not going to jump and spend a bunch of money on free agents initially in the offseason. We're going to wait. And I was in support of that. I was like, oh, that's nice. They can sit back and see what the market's looking like. And they sat back, and the market kept getting weaker for free agent hitters. Pitchers, pretty damn strong. Luckily, they don't need to sign any free agent pitchers to significant money. They don't need that, and they shouldn't. Maybe, like, Roki Sasaki was the lone exception. He wouldn't have been a lot of money, and they didn't get him, but I didn't expect them to get him, like, at all. But they sat back, and we all watched first baseman fly off the board. Like, absolutely fly off the board. For very affordable wages. Like, Josh Naylor got traded, Carlos Santana signed. Carlos Santana was not going to sign with the Mariners. That was pretty clear. They offered him more money in another year than the Guardians. We talked about that. Whatever. They could have traded for Josh Naylor. Again, Christian Walker signed for 3 years and $60 million. They kept just sitting back. And basically the whole offseason, they haven't set up. Donovan Solano and Jorge Polanco and that trade for Austin Shenton is not sitting up. It's not the video game pose of sitting up in your chair and locking in. They did quite literally the opposite this offseason. An offseason coming off last offseason that was already disappointing for fans everywhere. And now I think the anger is at a fever pitch. I have never seen this much negative thoughts about a good team as going into this season, just how this offseason has played out. Excuse me, it is early in the morning and I'm recording this. I think even casual fans who don't pay as much attention as us sickos are looking right now at this team. And maybe they can't make super informed opinions about, like, how full-time Dylan Moore and Jorge Polanco are going to pan out. But they can look and see how a bunch of first basemen and some corner outfields and just general, like, DH-worthy hitters flew off the board this offseason. No real superstars except for, like, Juan Soto, like, maybe Pete Alonso. And they go to other teams for decent money. And they're probably looking at the Mariners like, you can't do that? And the Mariners literally could. They just don't and won't. Like, you could say in their circumstances that they can't. Just because, like, Jared DePoto can't sign Christian Walker to $20 million a year for 3 years. I think that is a lame way of looking at it, really. I don't know if DePoto is a good president of baseball operations. I've talked about this a decent amount. He's gotten the team to a very good spot. The team has a number one farm system again. Is that crazy for me to say? Is that just wrong? Because the farm system initially after they rebuild was also really strong once they had Kelnick in there and Julio and like Cal and stuff and Logan Gilbert. But I don't know if it was number one farm system. They have the number one farm system in ball. It's not like a consensus number one, but they definitely have a consensus like top three. You can even say a consensus top two farm system in all of baseball. That's great. That's awesome. Doesn't help the team currently right now, unless, of course, they made a trade from some of those prospects to improve the big league club. And I think as I get into my season preview, I think I'm going to have to forecast another like busy trade deadline out of pure need. Unless somehow, some way, this team offensively puts it together with these pieces, which would be kind of insane. I just don't. I'm at my wit's end with this regime again. Jerry DePoto has done, I think, a good job of getting the team from like not a rebuild. They didn't call it a rebuild. Did they need to rebuild? No, but I wasn't against it. And they've come out the other side. 2021 was awesome, ahead of schedule. 2022 was a great year. Maybe the best year to be a Mariners fan since literally 2001. They come out with this team who is winning games by preventing runs and scoring timely runs against the opponent. You know, scoring more runs than their opponent more often than not. You know, that's a good thing. That is a good thing. They have this core of youth and a great pitching staff that they've molded to fit their home ballpark perfectly. They have a franchise catcher. They have a center fielder who has a ceiling of like a 10 war player and a floor of basically like a 4 win player who's super young and exciting and awesome and very personable. He's a superstar. He is a star that this Mariners team in the past has seen in different ways before. And yet the dread that I'm feeling going into this season is immense. I don't know what to do to fix it. I can talk myself through my optimistic view of this team because there's an optimistic way to look at this team, and there's plenty of good about this team. Like I said, I've never seen people be so negative, myself included, about a good team. Like on paper, floor-wise, this is still a good team. I think I'll get into it in my preview later on in closer to the season. I do think this team has a lower floor than teams past. And I won't get into it right now. But we're at this point where the Mariners ticket sales people are sending these really weird texts to people to get everyone to buy tickets to opening day. And you look at the opening day ticket sales, and usually I think by now, like, it'd be fairly sold out. And it's not yet. I think we're going into territory where they're going to start seeing these effects on the fans. Now, if they come out winning, it doesn't matter at all. Like, winning, I've said, winning fixes everything. It doesn't matter. But it's bad vibes right now. Completely bad vibes. And it's tough. I think they just completely whiffed on this offseason. Last season, it was just a lot of moves. It was moving a mountain to maybe win one more game with the moves they made last year. If you hear any snoring, my dog is in my lap just snoring right now. So disregard if you're hearing that. And then this offseason, completely different. They did kind of the opposite. They moved nothing to basically win no more games. Like, they basically replaced Justin Turner and Josh Rojas from the position player group with Donovan Solano and third baseman, apparently, Jorge Polanco. And I don't think the team is better off. I think entering the year, they're better on paper than last year because of Randy, and that's it. But at the end of the season last year, this is not a better team than that. I just can't convince myself that it is. Jerry DePoto also like opened his mouth for an interview last week, which is never has not been a good thing when he opens his mouth. He generally doesn't say things that make the fan base happy. And he didn't this time around. I mean, he's not going to come out and say, like, this offense is not good. I don't think Jerry DePoto's stupid. I don't think he's looking at this team and like, oh, yeah, that's a World Series caliber offense. I think he looks at the pitching staff and thinks that, which I would agree with. But he said things that piss people off. They didn't really rub me the wrong way because I don't expect him to say anything good these days. And I genuinely don't care much about what he has to say. Because, I mean, he's not going to say anything bad about this team directly, obviously. He's the one who's built it. My brother, he has made the sandwich. He's not going to say anything bad about the sandwich. He said more or less that this team is better than people are making it out to be. Like, the last month and a half, month and change of the season showed that, like, this offense statistically has shown that they're better than, like, what is on the surface. I could go into the merits of that. I think there are some things you could point to be optimistic. Taking that last month of the season with like Edgar and Dan last year is definitely an optimistic way to view things. And sure, their peripherals as a team, I discussed at length at the end of last season that they're pretty good. Like their like hard hit rate and all that. But just, I can't get over the Haniger is the starting DH on opening day, probably. I just can't. I can't call that a serious team if that is the case. And so, Jerry, I just need you to shut up, brother. I can't deal with it anymore. It's just, I just tuned him out. I don't need to hear him speak about the team at all. I think the trade market was weird this offseason. I don't think it was entirely his fault that they weren't able to trade one of their starting pitchers. And I don't disagree with him when he said the whole time that he doesn't want to trade any of these five starters because they're so good and so valuable to the team. And I get it. I absolutely understand that. And I think as the offseason rolled on, there was less and less opportunities to trade for guys on bad teams because a huge strength of this team right now, right, is the farm system. You don't trade with a good team. You don't trade for one of their good players and trade back prospects unless they are going through a rebuild or retool or whatever the hell they want to call it. You're not going to trade prospects to the Phillies for Alec Boehm. The Phillies don't care about prospects. Dave Dombrowski particularly doesn't. But, like, same thing if, like, you're trying to trade with the Yankees or trade for Tristan Casas of the Red Sox. You have to trade Luis Castillo. You have to trade Bryce Miller or Brian Wu. You have to trade a guy that's useful to the good teams. And the problem is there weren't that many guys to trade for on the bad teams with just prospects. I think hanging on to them is fine. I wish they were a little bit more proactive about trying to get someone earlier in this offseason with those prospects. But if they have them going into the season, I think they're going to have to do something at the trade deadline with a good amount of those prospects. I just think they're going to have to. Some of them could potentially do things in Major League Baseball for the team in 2025. Not very many of them, though. That's what I worry about. I worry that this crop of prospects, many of which are position players, most of the best ones in the system are position players. There's some fun pitchers, but there's a lot of good position players that look like not necessarily superstars of the future, but potentially solid big league contributors of the future, with which this regime has not been able to produce. I mean, you could go back to Zirenzic as well. Like, this team for 15 straight years, they haven't really been able to promote very many useful big league position players. DePoto's one crown jewel, obviously, is Cal and Julio, I guess, two. And maybe this next group of prospects, they're going to produce some good, solid, contributing big league guys, you know. But I worry it comes too late in the process of what they've already built here, on the pitching side in particular. I'd like to think all these guys are going to be awesome and great and contribute to the team in 2026 and some in 2025, but we'll still have all these good pitchers in 2026 and 2027 when all these guys are making their debuts. But that's just not generally how it goes. Really isn't. And so I worry the clock is just ticking, not even necessarily on the competitive window, but on this particular roster. With the pitching staff they've built, I worry they're just absolutely bungling it royally. I really can't believe he didn't make a big trade this offseason. I really can't believe that. He talked about that, too. I mean, they shopped Castillo. Like, that was not a fake thing. I think he said they got a lot of calls about their pitchers, but there just wasn't the right fit, which, I mean, we don't have to take his word and trust him. But I'm on the record, I would have done Castillo for Casas if that was on the table. A straight-up swap, I would have absolutely done that. If that was on the table and it was denied by the Mariners, I would be a little pissed. And if that was denied by the Red Sox, I would understand. So he said they got calls for the pitchers, didn't trade them. Again, I'm not necessarily against that. I feel like they could have shopped their prospects around more, because there are still like good contributing guys on bad teams that need prospects. Maybe there's not a superstar. Like, you're not trading for Brent Rooker for a bunch of prospects because he re-signed with the A's, and it looked like that was in their plans, and I'm really happy for him. But that wasn't going to happen. After getting Randy, you're not trading some prospects for Luis Robert of the White Sox. That wouldn't really make sense. Who is even on the Marlins that you would want? No one really. I'm okay that they didn't trade for Nolan Arenado. I think he's cooked. I think something could have been there to trade for with the Giants, and still is. Like, I still like the idea of Lamont Wade in a Mariners uniform, and that pushes Rayleigh into a more full-time outfield role and Robles into less of a full-time outfield role. I'm still pro that. What really pains me is Ha-Sung Kim and Hye-Sung Kim. Hye-Sung Kim, and I still don't know if I'm saying that correctly, signs with the Dodgers. I talked about it. Whatever. He wanted to play with the Dodgers. They gave him a good contract. The Mariners could have given him. Sure. I want them to go after Ha-Sung Kim so bad. I don't even know if he's going to be a good hitter. I don't even think he'd be a good hitter for the Mariners if they signed him. But the guy can play elite gold glove, second base, and shortstop, is a right-handed hitter, and I think I'd rather him play full-time at those infield positions than Jorge Polanco or Dylan Moore. But now Jorge Polanco's the third base. So really, DePoto threw me an absolute curveball, and all of us with a curveball with that one. And they couldn't even shell out a multi-year deal for just a Ha-Sung Kim, a good player. A good player. What did he sign for? What did Ha-Sung Kim sign for? It's extra painful seeing these very modest contracts being handed out. Like the Pete Alonso one, they literally could have done that. Like they could afford that. Ha-Sung Kim, 2-year deal with the Rays. Why is 2 years, $29 million. Paid $13 million for 2025. You couldn't do that instead of re-sign Polanco for... Polanco's contract is interesting. 1 year, $7.75 million with an opt-out for 2026. It's a player option with a buyout if it's player option for 2026 for $6 million or $750,000 buyout if he has 450 plate appearances in 2025 and passes a physical. The option rises to $8 million if he has 550 plate appearances. No team option, just player option with buyout if he meets that plate appearance and threshold. No trade clause in 2025, which is so odd, and $3.5 million worth of incentives. That contract is so odd for Jorge Polanco, and they couldn't just give more money in an extra year to Ha-Seong Kim. Like, if they did that and Ha-Seong Kim said no, whatever. But I don't even think they offered him. The biggest issue I have is I look at a big free agent now, and I'm like, yeah, that's cool. He'd totally fit the Mariners, but they're not even going to call that guy. Like Pete Alonso. Or even Juan Soto. Like, the best players available. Even Alex Bregman. Christian Walker. I'm looking at these guys, and the Mariners automatically take themselves out of the running for these guys. I think that's the most infuriating thing. I would much rather be the Blue Jays. The Blue Jays currently are spending a lot of money, but they've missed on so many opportunities. They've been second or third in these races for these huge stars. I would so much rather be the Blue Jays and get close to signing those guys. The Mariners are looking at that and like, no, we're actually better off because we didn't even try to sign him. So it's better to have not loved at all. That's the Mariners' philosophy, I think. It's just crazy. That was my almost half an hour long, just pure 8 o'clock in the morning rant about how I was feeling coming into this morning about this team. I'll touch on Jorge Polanco briefly. I mentioned him a lot. So he's going to be at third base, which is super interesting because his defense at second was pretty awful last year. So third base potentially could help the range issue if JP is going to be a good shortstop, which JP is a huge wild card for next season. Like Jorge Polanco, I think you can get away with being a less rangy third baseman if you have a good arm, which I think Jorge Polanco can have. He's a strong guy. It was his fielding that was just shitty at second base last year. So Perry Hill just needs to hunker down and lock Jorge Polanco in a deep, dark dungeon until he can make picks really easily at third base. So I don't know about the positional thing there. I mean, it's out of pure necessity because they really need a third baseman. And so it looks like Dylan Moore might be full-time second base with like Austin Shenton and Donovan Solano as backups for first base, second base, and third base. So Jorge Polanco coming off knee surgery. So I've talked about this too. You can look at this like glass half full, glass half empty. We'll never really know how the Mariners feel about him. Like, this is an indicator to at least, we won't know 100% how they felt about his last season and going forward, but this is an indicator that they think the knee injury probably hampered him a lot last year, and they liked the physical after his knee surgery and recovery this offseason. You get that? Like, was his knee so bad last year that he should have gotten surgery for it midseason? He played through it and that affected his like swing and his fielding and his running. Like his I think it was his plant. I think it was right foot. So his when he's batting lefty, his plant leg. And maybe his power was diminished and they factored this all in and they said, okay, you're feeling healthy after the surgery. We're going to give you another deal because we think there's more in you. We know you've been a good hitter in the past. So we're going to give you a modest deal here and see how it shakes out because we need a third baseman on the cheap. I think that was the biggest deal, is that he was going to take less money than he was owed last year because of the season he had last year. He wasn't the worst player in the world last year. He was still ever so slightly above replacement level. He still, you know, drew some walks. It was just the power was so down, and the pull power especially. He had like a one good month. I think it was July. He just lit the world on fire in that month. And then the rest of the months, he was quite poor. I don't know how to feel about this. On the one hand, you can feed me the line that the knee injury was bad and really affected him last year, and he's going to be coming in the season healthy. But you can also feed me the line that he is going to be 32 coming off of a knee surgery. So even if the knee surgery helped his issue, does that do further weakening of his knee? He's 32. Like, it's not... And he's been playing ball for a while. This is not a... I wouldn't call Jorge Polanco a young 32. Not to call the man old or anything. But he's been in Major League Baseball for, I mean, a decade now. Like, at the Major League level. He made his debut when he was super young. Didn't play a whole lot. And then has had injuries and problems a decent amount in his career. And he finally was just, he was still a pretty consistent hitter with the Twins. And now he's aging into his it's going to be the age 31 season, but I think he turns 32 in season. And I just don't know, man. there's not a whole lot of good options behind him, I think is also my problem here. Is that they also can't afford to sign a whole lot of depth, and so they're going to have to rely on their minor league depth. I think we're going to see this season if this organization has the chops to produce some prospects that can contribute at a decent level, even in a depth role for the Major League Baseball team. We're going to have to see a lot of Ryan Bliss. We're going to see a lot more Tyler Locklear, I think. I think we're going to see potentially Hogan Windisch, who I've talked about for a couple of years now. I think he's probably going to be in AAA, and he plays all infield positions, basically. I think that's like Brock Rodin, maybe. Ben Williamson. Like these guys who've been kicking around in AA recently, who are probably going to make it up to the PCL this year at some point. We're going to see what this position player dev apparatus is made of in this organization this season out of pure necessity because of the depth being so poor. So it's brutal. I don't even want to talk about Jorge Polanco a lot more. My only other Mariners topic I want to talk about, as I mentioned a little bit, is Jerry Dipoto a good president of baseball operations? If I asked you that question, what would your answer be? If you asked me that question, my answer would be, I don't know. And I think that kind of tells you that no, I don't. He's not. Maybe he's an okay one. Maybe he can. He's not a Dave Dombrowski, you know. He's not going to really give you. He's not going to have the cojones to make huge moves to mortgage future and his job to win now. And I don't think he can talk to ownership and make them do that. Maybe he's just a good guy to get into your team to set up a decent infrastructure of like player dev and scouting, because that is a huge strength of this team, and it's shown. They've drafted super well the past few years. We've seen the rewards in the pitching staff and some of the young guys on this team at the major league level. As I've talked about, I've given him credit for this. I've really enjoyed watching these guys. I like having a good farm system. I think he's good at that. But maybe he's just not the guy to get them over the finish line. And that's okay. I just think we all need to recognize that at this point. There was a video going around the internet a while ago. I still see it occasionally. It was like a video of a street vendor making these drinks. And it was like, oh, this guy's been making drinks forever. He makes them so fast. And he's not actually making the drinks fast. He's just like vibrating and moving around and making a lot of like knee-jerk movements to make it look like he's moving fast. Like he's making it look like he's working quick, but he's not. He's like putting sugar in cups and making drinks. If you know what I'm talking about, you're probably too online like myself. If you don't know what I'm talking about, I envy you. But that's Jerry Dipoto. I just feel like he does a lot of things. I think he does a lot of things, which is not a compliment necessarily. He's a big volume guy. I just don't know if he's the guy to build a true contender. He's just a busybody. I'm not convinced he's a good president of baseball operations. This is year 10. Year 11? No, this is almost a decade now of him being the Mariners GM / president of baseball operations. And they've gotten to a spot where they've been consistently projected to win like 86 games for 3 straight years, which is not a terrible problem to have, I might add. Like I said, he's gotten us to this point. But they've won what? What's their record winning under him? They've won 90 games in 2021. I think they won 90 again in 2022, right? And then they won 87 in 2023 and 87 last year. Am I crazy? My memory's real bad. But like 85 to 90 wins. Like, again, good team, not amazing team. Team that is constantly in the wild card race. And even when they're in the division race, they lose steam and let a better run team like the Astros consistently beat them for it. So I don't know if he's a good executive. I really don't. I can't say in confidence that he is, which is unfortunate. I think this season, if they miss the playoffs, or if it's the middle of the year and they are fumbling with a new coach, with new coaching staff, including Edgar Martinez, I think this is the year he gets fired. If they make the playoffs, it'd be hard to sell his firing. But if they miss the playoffs, if they win 87 games and miss the wild card by 2 or something, like classic Mariners ball, I think he's gone. I think it has to be. I'd be fully in support of that. It sucks. This is such a not structured. This is such an unstructured show today. I didn't have a whole lot to talk about. My next episode is going to be more structured. I'm going to talk about the farm system a little bit. Now that we know none of these guys have been traded this offseason. That's kind of what I was waiting for. But I'm going to talk about that, and then we're really going to start just getting into the season preview stuff. Because the offseason is done. Like, we've been told the offseason is done for the Mariners, which is, again, another just absolute gut punch. But a couple other things I wanted to chat about. The Luka Doncic trade. That's crazy. And now I'm quite online. I listen to a lot of baseball podcasts as well, turns out. I like listening to people chat about ball. A lot of people have tried to put this in MLB terms, either on podcasts or just on the internet. And I think there have been a lot of good suggestions. I've heard a lot of different opinions on this. First of all, I'll preface, there is no possible trade like this in MLB terms. Like, there really isn't. Like, in terms of global superstars, you have some. Obviously, the main one, Shohei Ohtani. Like, if he got traded for a good player but not a player like him, like, that would, I guess, be the closest thing I could try to put. But MLB is just not as, like, personality superstar marketing driven as the NBA, partially because it's just like it takes one superstar to win a championship in the NBA, and that's not what always happens, but that's kind of how it goes. And in MLB, that's just not how it is. It's a lot more team-focused, I'd say, on winning. At least from just like a fan and marketing standpoint. So it's hard to put this in MLB terms. But in terms of trades that have happened, I think the Mookie trade, is up there. It's like, that's the comp I've heard the most, which makes sense because like trading Mookie at that point in his career is fairly similar to trading Luka at this point in his career. Except Mookie did win a ring with the Red Sox, so at least Red Sox fans have that, where Mavericks fans don't have that for Luka, which is brutal. But it's like if Mookie was traded for, like, Kershaw, who at that point was still a great pitcher, but obviously on the tail end of his prime. Like, he was past his prime at that point, but still a great player. Maybe even still a little bit in his prime, but you know you'd rather have probably, like, what, 25-year-old Mookie than 30-year-old Kershaw in 2019, right? It's the same thing here. Anthony Davis, tremendous player. Indebatably right now, his prime. He's been phenomenal the past few years with the Lakers. He won a ring with the Lakers after they traded for him. But he's being talked about like he's a bum because Luka Doncic is 25 years old. And Anthony Davis, while he's still great now, is what, 6 years, 7 years older than him and is going to tail off a lot sooner than Luka will probably. So it's like if Mookie was traded for, at the time, like Kershaw. Because he was traded for, what, Connor Wong and who else was even in that trade? It's so early. It's too early for me. I don't wake up this early. Mookie Betts trade. It was Connor Wong. Jeter Downs, right, was in that trade. Who was the other piece? Connor Wong. Traded Betts and David Price. Alex Verdugo. Yeah, I knew I was forgetting the big piece. It was Verdugo, Wong, and Jeter Downs. Yeah, that's like, that's like if Luka just got traded to the Lakers for Max Christie, Jared Vanderbilt, and Bronny James. Bronny being the Jeter Downs of this situation. So it's hard to put it in terms. I think of a hypothetical trade. I think if you go back, it's also like Juan Soto being traded. I think it's even more like Juan Soto being traded than Mookie. Honestly. And Juan Soto also won a ring with his previous team before getting traded. But Juan Soto getting traded either to the Padres, but from the Padres to the Yankees, it's like if Juan Soto got traded for Gerrit Cole, I think is also a really good way to put it. Juan Soto was like, what, 24 when that trade happened, 25, same age as Luka. Superstar, looks like he's going to play another 10, 15 years, be amazing. And instead of the huge haul of like a lot of really solid pitchers that the Padres got from that trade from the Yankees, it's like if they just got like Gerrit Cole and maybe one other player. Because Gerrit Cole, again, great pitcher, still a good pitcher. If you go back to when this trade happened and they traded Gerrit Cole, he would have been awesome for the Padres. This year, last year, the next like year or two, couple years probably, he's still going to be a great pitcher, but he is aging. How old is Gerrit Cole? 32? 33? 34 now. Yeah. So it's like, yeah, that's a great player who's going to help the team he goes to, but it's not worth trading Juan Soto for. I think Juan Soto for hypothetically Gerrit Cole when that trade happened is a good representation of that trade in MLB terms. I can't believe that trade happened. It's insane. One other thing that I wanted to chat about before I get out of here and cut this off a little short today, a little bit. I was looking back at the Hall of Fame ballot recently just because it kind of showed up on my timeline. Ben Zobrist has been on my mind. Ben Zobrist was one of three players on the ballot this year, first-time ballot, that fell off the ballot and didn't get any votes. He was one of three guys. But the rest of the guys, the first-year guys on the ballot, Ichiro and Cece, obviously, the two of three inductees. Felix Hernandez got 20.6%, as we discussed. Dustin Pedroia got 11.9%. David Wright got, oh no, it's the second year, never mind. So those are the guys that stayed on the ballot or got elected from their first year. The other guys who fell off after being on there just this year, Ian Kinsler, Russell Martin, Brian McCann, Troy Tulowitzki, Adam Jones, Curtis Granderson, Carlos Gonzalez, all of those guys got between 10 to 2 votes. So some percentage of the votes, but still fell off the ballot under 5%. The three guys who didn't receive any votes, Fernando Rodney, Hanley Ramirez, which honestly, kind of wild to me that Hanley didn't even get a vote. Just saying. And then Ben Zobrist. I The more I think about it, I think Ben Zobrist should be in the Hall of Fame. And I don't think if you look at his body of work, I think he's a great player. Like, obviously, he's a legendary player. I don't think he'd be a conventional Hall of Famer that I would vote for when comparing him to, like, other his contemporaries and, like, stars. Like, I wouldn't vote for him over Ichiro or other hitters like Beltran, Andrew Jones, Chase Utley, A-Rod, even like Bobby Abreu. I don't think I'd vote for him over any of those guys. But when you look at Ben Zobrist, and I think about the Hall of Fame being kind of a museum of baseball history and the best players and most impactful and important players in the history of our beautiful sport, I think Ben Zobrist should be in there. You want to make the argument, and I'm so intrigued every year when this comes up, and I like the argument of, like, can you tell the story of baseball history without Ben Zobrist? And I don't think you can. The guy is he's your utility player's favorite utility player. He is the ultimate super utility player. And if you haven't, go to Ben Zobrist's baseball reference page and just look up the seasons he had with the Rays. Like, he was also good late in his career with, like, briefly the A's, but with the Cubs, I think, is where, I mean, that's when I remember him the most by, is, like, he was on the Cubs World Series team, and he's pretty good for them. But go look at him on the Rays. He was a absolute superstar utility player. Like, you look at his 2009 season, he got 8th in MVP. He put up 8.6 baseball reference war in 2009 for the Rays. And he played second base, right field, left field, shortstop, center field, first base, and third base all in that season and put up 8.6 war. 149 OPS plus, 948 OPS. You look at his body of work, he has 44.5 baseball reference war. The counting stats aren't quite there, I think, is why no one voted for him. Like, the career stats, like, he only has 1,500 hits, like 167 home runs, 116 stolen bases. But I think I'm of the thinking that he should be a Hall of Famer because he's the greatest utility player of all time. And I think that deserves recognition in Cooperstown. Call me crazy. Maybe it's a little wacky that I'm saying that, but I think he deserves to be in the Hall of Fame. And he's going to go to the Veterans Committee, I hope. I want to like write a letter to the Veterans Committee imploring them to put Ben Zobrist in the Hall. You don't even need to have an asterisk. You can just have, like, a separate little section. Like, yeah, this guy, amazing career, and paved the way for, like, modern baseball. Like, we see so many more utility players now. That's a hypothesis. That's just, I have no stats to back that up. I just assume so. I think the greatest one should be in the Hall of Fame. Correct me. Reach out to me and tell me I'm wrong. Tell me there's a better utility player in the history of ball. Present one to me, please. But I think he should be a Hall of Famer. And I want to end on that. I want to salute Ben Zobrist and tell you that, yeah, the next episode, thanks for listening to this one. If you're 49 minutes in, you listen to me vamp early in the morning about my frustrations with the Seattle Mariners that I hope you too share. Thank you for listening. Appreciate it. Next episode is going to be looking at the farm system, who might make an impact this year, just the overall outlook of what is a really good system right now, which is cool. So, and then we'll really get into season preview stuff, hopefully. I'm still kind of planning that out. But again, thank you so much for listening. I'll see you next time. And Ben Zobrist for the Veterans Committee, Hall of Fame. I'm starting the campaign now.